Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give the discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by the co-founder of Selby Anderson, Dom Hawes. Dom, it's really good to have you here today.
Dave, I am delighted to be here. It feels like it was only yesterday we spoke, but that's the COVID effect for you. It's probably a year or so, but really, really pleased to be online with you.
Time flies when you're having a pandemic. And all that.
Doesn't it just?
So we're talking over Zoom, and in true professional Zoom format, you've blurred your background. So I've got to ask you, where do we find you today?
I'm at home today because I'm a very obedient person, and we've been told to work from home if we can. At the time this is being recorded, on the date of the recording, yes, exactly. Sorry about that. Giving away trade secrets. I'm working from home today, and I am working. Actually, this is my wife's office. I don't have an office at home at the moment. When we went back to the office last year, I closed mine down and repurposed the room to discourage myself from working at home.
Oh, okay. Lockdown enforcements aside, is that how you've worked over the last year? You've been out?
I've been out. I should always be out. My job is to be out, I think. Not necessarily out in my office, maybe out in other people's offices, either meeting new agencies or going to see our own agencies or meeting potential new clients or new funders. I can achieve a certain amount of work at a desk, but you know, one of the things as the group has grown is it's become apparent that there are plenty of other people better at almost everything that happens at a desk than me. So I could be doing it, but inevitably there'll be someone better at it. So I think I'm better out doing what I do and leaving the experts to do what they do.
But we should explain a bit about the group. So tell us a bit about what Selby Anderson does.
Sure. So we're a marketing services group, marketing and communications. We are about half and half, 50-50 B2B. We also have a brand marketing capability these days. And within B2B, we really focused on four vertical markets: financial, technology, pharma and biotech, and industrial and automation. So we have practices in each of those areas. We're about 150 people, I think, something around there. We've got another acquisition due probably about the time this is airing. So if you're listening to it as it's airing, I think we're probably 175 now. If you're listening to it any later than that, we may even be more than that.
So I worry these things have quite a long shelf life.
They do, the long tail.
Now to the few years' time.
They do. They have a very very long shelf life podcast. So we've got all these people, they're all experts, they're all specialists. That's our whole mojo, is we're a group of people with deep knowledge in the sectors they operate in. And we work around the world, actually, although we're only based in the UK. We have campaigns running in pretty much all major continents. But for the time being, we're domiciled and we operate out of this market. And that was a very important thing for me when we started this business, is you know, I love the concept. It was against the backdrop of Brexit, of course, when we started this. So I love the concept that we might be helping the plucky export effort, you know.
Well, very, very good for you. I think the export effort needs all the help it can get.
So, I would agree.
So let's look at your role within that.
Yeah.
Because I guess as co-founder, you kind of had the opportunity to pick what you personally wanted to be able to do, I'm guessing. So why did you choose the... It sounds your role is very client-facing. Why did you choose that?
It's not enormous. Actually, to be honest, it's not enormously client-facing. It's not as client-facing as I would like, actually. Okay. But I think my job, you know, we're only 3 years old, and my job has changed. Well, my job's changed three times in those 3 years, actually. So when we first started, there were three co-founders of the business. Mm-hmm. One who was very much part-time and then two full-times. And over time, the third founder has gone on. He's very entrepreneurial. He's gone on to other projects. But we pretty much looked at who we were and said, right, you know, who wears which hat based on what we perceived our strengths and weaknesses to be. So I ended up with the role that I had, which at founding was the CEO role. Largely because I didn't have the operational capability that Simon did, and I didn't have the ability that Ed had in his areas. So I led the M&A work and all the fundraising stuff. Actually, when we were getting up and running, so I naturally slotted into that part and part of the organization when we very first started. You know, it was us three, and then we had one agency, then two, then three, then four, and that, you know, in our first year. And because there were sort of disparate organizations coming together, there was a lot of integration work, which Simon naturally gravitated towards, you know, with, he comes from, you know, he's a dyed in the wool agency man. He's been in agencies all his life, big agencies, small agencies, bought them, sold them. So, you know, and I didn't really, if I'm honest, understand quite how much agencies had changed since I'd been in agency. So Simon led that bit. And I led more kind of strategy and how we were going to make the whole thing fit together. But there was no real client contact at all. We tried to do that kind of collaboration thing very early on. We tried a couple of different models, but what we found was any effort at the center to encourage people to do stuff was roundly rejected. But year one was really us trying to make things happen. Year two, my role flipped. So rather than, thinking hierarchically and, you know, sitting at the top of a org chart, my role became to flip that, actually. So we created a thing called the Agency Management Board, which was made up of agency leaders. So in our group, the leaders of the agencies run the group effectively, the day-to-day work, the decision making. So we're big believers in decentralization. We call it locality. It's one of our six defining ideals. So there has to be strategic direction, which is my role, one of my roles, but it's not about decision making. And then this year, that's, I think, gone even further. So really, if I had to, you know, if someone was to say, what do I do now? Both Simon and I actually have the same role, which is to promote what we call the Selby Anderson effect. And that is to try and turn us into a talent magnet. So we believe that talent will win and talent gets to choose. So you have to create the right strategy, the right structure and the right environment to attract the best talent. And if you do that, you'll have the best brains. And if you've got the best brains, you'll have the best clients. And if you have the best clients, you'll have the best business. So we're all about now trying to create that strategy, structure, environment piece. And everything that we do now is about that. And invariably, for me, the strategy piece is about trying to create the collaborative opportunity so that we can create hybrid teams to solve increasingly complex client issues from across our group with deep specialists available to the client as they need them. So they don't get what we've got, they get what they need, if that makes sense. So this is a very, very long way of answering a very simple question, but I'm increasingly starting to talk to clients now because the type of problems that I'm asking us as a group to solve are changing. So they're the kind of problems that one agency on its own probably can't, certainly of our size, probably can't solve. But by harnessing the power of the group that we now have, we can.
I'd love to just dive into that a little bit more, because it sounds, it just from what you've described there, actually achieving that collaboration across multiple different entities sounds like it's a big challenge in and of itself. So what are the kind of headlines as to how you're going about trying to enable that collaboration to happen?
So it's a massive challenge, and particularly if you take in agencies that have been fiercely independent. I mean, the worst way to try and do that is to mandate it. If you try and mandate it, you will fail. So you have to try and create the right environment to achieve that, and you have to create the right structure to achieve that. And the right structure invariably, for me, means no interference from the center. And what we're finding is that agencies are naturally leaning towards kindred spirits. And so there are two agencies within the group, Unity and Law, Creative, and I don't think there's been a brief in the last 6 months that they haven't collaborated on. I just don't think there is one. And so within each of the vertical markets we're looking at, I think clusters will form, right. And I think that they will naturally collaborate anyway. Now, to facilitate that, the structure that we've put in place is loosely based on Stanley McChrystal's team of teams. So highly autonomous, enabled people who get to choose who they work with. Now, that's very idealistic and really hard to deliver. It's pretty hard to deliver if a brief comes into an agency, because generally the agencies are focused on their existing client setup. And frankly, at the moment, I don't think any of our agencies have got much capacity. Everyone's flat out. So this kind of model also relies on living with a little bit of capacity. But in future, as we start to find these slightly more complex issues, the teams may be built from the center. They'll be run by an agency. So we have no account management capability at Selby Anderson level, and I don't think really much desire to build one. So ideally we find a client with a need, we'll introduce them to an agency that effectively becomes the host, so the lead agency within Selby, but the team is comprised of just the right people that are needed at the right time. And I can think of probably 6 or 7 projects that we've delivered in the last 4 to 6 months where there have been people from multiple agencies pulled in, whether it's there's a specific UI or UX need, for example, and that person happens to be the most expert person in that vertical market that we've got, or you've got someone who has specific crisis management expertise in that field, so gets seconded onto a team. It's hard is the honest answer, but it has to be driven by the teams themselves, and they have to have the confidence to know to stick to their own swim lane and say, this is what I do better than anyone else, but that person does this better than anyone else too, so I need them on my team.
Yeah, you kind of need that awareness of your own strengths but also the strengths of everybody around as well.
Yeah, and so the final piece of allowing that kind of collaboration is making sure you've got the systems in place underpinning everything. So we're all operating on the same tools and systems and data and all that kind of stuff. And that's also, by the way, really hard, because you've got to get people to adopt the systems in the first place. We're not perfect. We're not there yet.
So I'm fascinated then by how you got to this position of having to wrestle with this really difficult problem. So perhaps could you take us through a little bit of your career journey?
Yeah.
And I'm particularly interested from the perspective of our listeners. So things that you might recommend that they emulate.
Yeah.
Their experience.
It's been a very hard journey, so I wouldn't try and emulate much of it. There are easier ways to do what I've done. But no, so I've had a very untypical atypical career. So I dropped out of university pretty early on, And I moved to London, with a suitcase. And my first job here was supporting the data department of a large management consultancy as an analyst. So although I dropped out of university, I was pretty mathematical, and I'd spent some time writing macros on Lotus 1-2-3, if anyone can remember that, at an engine testing centre in Oxfordshire.
Now you're dating yourself.
I know I am. Yeah, but there you go. If I tell you we had to load it up onto the computer on a floppy, that's even worse. But so I went and spent some time at this management consultancy, and I was very lucky to do that, because very, very early on, it gave me an understanding of data and how to analyse it and how to collect and collate that data. I then went and joined the British Army for 6 years. Which completely unrelated, but I think from that, the Army's very good at teaching you things like initiative, determination, not being afraid, not being afraid of the unknown. I think that was very helpful. It's certainly been helpful at those parts of my career where I've had to, let's say, step ahead of my ability, to get on. But when I came out of the Army, that for me, that was a transformational thing. So I couldn't get a job when I came out of the Army. I wanted to get into the creative industry. I had an uncle who was a big name in advertising, but my family don't believe in nepotism at all. So I couldn't get an easy route in there. So to get into the business, I had to spend 18 months temping, and I went in all sorts of different environments, in all sorts of different businesses, and I did all sorts of different jobs, and that gave me a very, very, very broad view, because I'm an observer. I like to watch and see what people are doing. It gave me a very broad view of lots of different businesses. And then when I started in the agency world, in fact, it was Simon Quarrenden who got me onto probably the number one biggest tip that I would give anybody, which is read. Read more. And it was Simon that took me aside and said, Dom, you have something, you've got some talent, you need to read this book, come back in a week and tell me what you thought of it. And then he gave me another book, and I haven't stopped since then. So I absolutely devour books, business books, I should say. I'm always trying to learn better ways of doing things. And the funny thing when you do that, especially if you're a non-graduate, and you start trying to bring some new ideas into the workplace, is other people feel quite threatened. Right. So I remember when I was in the agency world, and I was trying to do some different stuff, and it might have been wrong and I might have been naive, but I was trying to do different stuff. I was challenged by one of my colleagues. He said, yeah, but you just read about it in a book. It's like, well, that's what everyone does. Even if you go to university, you still read a damn book. But so I think the thing is, read the books and then try and put that stuff into practice, right? So, if you're not going to do that, right, if you don't have this, I must soak up knowledge and I must learn and I must get better, how the hell do you expect to get on in your career? So I think for me, the reading thing, because I've actually sort of flowed in and out of the marketing world, so I only spent 6 years in agency. Then I went and I did an e-commerce business, and I was still doing marketing, and it was B2B, but I was doing it as MD rather than as a marketing person. And that's a different thing. But all the way along the line, you pick up and test, And that's how M&A is a really good example, right? No one is born knowing how to do mergers and acquisitions, right? It just doesn't happen. You don't have an innate ability in mergers and acquisitions. So when I realized that, or when I thought about doing this business, I went away and found a course that teaches you how to do it. And then I studied it, right? And then you start by trying. You call up somebody and say, can I buy your business? And when they say yes, and you make a mistake and they say you're an idiot, you make sure you don't make that same mistake again. So that's been probably the defining bit of my career, is that I'm constantly testing, I'm constantly trying new things, and I've ended up, unfortunately, as a result, I'm not a specialist, so I have a network of specialists, a group of specialists, but I'm not one of them. I'm a generalist by nature, so I do a little bit of finance, a little bit of M&A, I understand quite a lot about marketing, I guess in a way I'm a bit of a polymath in that way, that there's a lot I can do, but not a lot I can do very well. Which is why I need to build a good team.
Yeah, that's a very modest description of a frankly amazing career, I think. But you exhorted us to read. So I'm going to ask you now to kind of do what it sounds like Simon did for you.
Yeah.
Way back. So What should we read? What's your recommended business marketing book of the moment?
It's not of the moment, but if you're not going to read any other book, this is the one book that you should read, which is Ray Cialdini, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And I know it's a cliche, but it's true.
And why should we read it?
Okay, because it teaches you the basics of our business, which is how to persuade people to do things you want them to do. It teaches you about the psychology of why people do things, things like social proof, why people follow the crowd. And I think, you know, in our business, where ultimately, you know, marketing is the best business in the world. There is no better job or role or thing that anyone could do, in my opinion, in the world than marketing, because we are what makes business work. And I'm not talking about marketing being, people have different definitions of marketing. But if you think about marketing, big picture, right? We're the people that get inside other people's heads and persuade them to do the things that we need them to do. And that is, to me, such a fascinating way to spend your life. And this book is the start of it. Now, there's all sorts of other things. You know, there's Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, which is also a very famous book. And there's The Chimp Paradox, you know, Professor Steve Peters. They're all along the same vein, right? Which is all about how do you get people, how do you understand the way the brain works and use that in your work to help your business thrive.
Great tips, thank you. Let's talk a bit more about, I was going to ask you about business marketing, but you talked a lot earlier about how you had seen the role of agency change within business marketing. I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about that, but also kind of put your crystal ball out and tell us kind of, well, where do you see that going next?
Yeah, so in between me leaving, so when I left the agency world, we had a thing called digital marketing, but it was basically building websites. WordPress didn't exist. And CD-ROMs before that, but so it wasn't digital marketing like we know now. When I came back, the whole programmatic thing is there, and you know, the whole way that agencies think had changed. Interestingly, a lot of the people structures haven't changed; they're just the same as before computers existed, which is one of my bete noir now. But so the challenges and the change now is this, you know. COVID aside, is this kind of hybrid thing we're seeing where there's a lot more talent in-house, and a successful model probably looks like, to me anyway, probably looks like a broad general experience and expertise in-house to cover off the business side of what needs to get done, and highly specialized skills being brought in by agencies as they're needed to create rounded campaigns. Now, the other thing that changed since I left agency and came back is the explosion or the creation of social media, so that everyone is now a publisher. And you know, it's a cliche, but achieving cut through, having creativity to get people's attention. Like, it's all very well knowing how to persuade them, but if you can't talk to them or reach them, you're not going to be able to persuade them. So that's really changed. And you know, the amount of spam we get, the amount of blah that we have to deal with day in, day out, I think that's going to get worse. Right. So the challenges for the future for me, there are a few. One is, you know, a cookieless future makes it harder to target people. I think it doesn't make it impossible. There's a very good podcast I know on this very subject, but the cookieless future, the cookieless future I think is interesting. It means I think we have to work harder. We have to think much more about intent, and then try and build our campaigns around that. I think if you overlay that with the kind of the GDPR issues that we've got, with achieving cut through, all the challenges that we're facing, the future looks much less like mass marketing, much more like kind of one-to-one, one-to-few, I guess it depends what industry you're in, but much better data. We need much better data so that we know who we're targeting. And I think a lot of people talk about data, including us, but I think we're literally just scratching the surface. I was having a conversation actually just earlier today about this very subject. So I started talking about data. So I was talking to an American agency actually, and they automatically assumed I meant customer data. But in an organization like ours, we have so much data swilling around our own organization, our documents, our presentations, our voice calls, you know, our WhatsApp, Slack, all those different channels, communication channels we have. We have loads of our own first party data that we're doing nothing with. And frankly, we should be. We've got networks. You know, when as soon as you pass like 40, 50 people, the complexity of your own network, it's beyond comprehension. Certainly it's beyond audit, because unfortunately LinkedIn's a walled garden. But so I'm interested in the agency of the future, I think, has to look at how do we harness our own network better? How do we harness our own data better so we understand our clients better? Because if we can't give them a leg up, they don't need us, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's something that you can already see beginning to happen, I think, in our day. It's interesting to think how much more significant that's going to be.
Well, I think it will be. Look, I think that there's a group of agencies currently calling themselves ABMers. You know, the people who are doing ABM generally understand data really well, right? They're using data well, and they're calling this thing ABM. They're calling it ABM, but I think we'll all be doing that kind of stuff. That's going to be the job.
The future of marketing.
It's the job, yeah.
Interesting, yeah. Interesting. So thank you for that. So if people want to find out more, Dom, about Selby Anderson, what should they do?
Well, they can go to our website, which at some stage, like all good cobbler's children, we may update so you actually can tell what we do. We also have a podcast called Marketing Trek. You can listen to that. Or you can, well, I think you've been on it yourself, haven't you?
Been on it. I'm speaking from experience.
Okay. And you can find us on LinkedIn. I'm pretty prolific on LinkedIn. I believe in LinkedIn as a great channel for meeting people and interacting. I think that's indeed how we met, actually, Dave. I met you on LinkedIn, then came to one of your events, and that's where all great things start. So yeah, website, LinkedIn, podcast, or phone us. We're very accessible.
Brilliant. Dom, co-founder of Selby Anderson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Dom Hawes. Thanks too to our technical man from Through the Eye, Andrew Gratian, and to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.